is I'm very pleased with this session. I said last December that I wanted to take an education session. I think it was all speaking for itself. I'll enumerate that in a moment, but I think this is a session where a future begins to be unwrapped of what we know to accomplish. And it wants to restore it and invest in education. Investment in education at every level. whether it be the $20 million to continue our pre-K pilot program, whether it be $16 billion for K-12 schools and tuition support, and pension support for our teachers, some 52% of the budget, or whether it be the very first ever facilities fund for public charter schools, $20 million in grants and $50 million in available school construction loans. We build a more solid, firm foundation under our public charter schools, and we'll make it more possible for more communities to consider public charter schools as an option in their community. Teacher performance grants of $70 million. In our first 2 years, we secured the very first performance funding for teachers. I've said many times, if you want more good teachers, pay good teachers more. And so we distributed last year about $30 million in performance bonuses for teachers, and we have built on that, $70 million in this budget, that 50% of which will actually go into the base pay of the teacher. And the teacher receives a bonus under this new budget. 50% of that bonus will go into their base pay in the long term. That's a real affirmation of excellence in the classroom, and it's greatly endorsed. I'm also grateful the General Assembly moved a $100 tax credit for the cost of in-classroom supplies. Being married to a school teacher now for 30 years this summer, I know that there isn't a school teacher in Indiana that doesn't reach into their own pocketbook and wallet and buy supplies for their classroom. And now there's going to be some recognition of that and relief for teachers of those costs. Adult high schools, $66 million. Whether it be the Excel Centers or Goodwill Schools, I have been greatly encouraged at these schools that provide, particularly the young adults who may have dropped out of high school, an effective second chance at high school. And we have a great commitment to that. I'm also grateful for the expansion of our educational voucher program, the largest in the country. We eliminated the cap on the voucher, but also raising the cap on the scholarship granting organization tax credit from $7.5 million to $9.5 million. This is going to open doors of opportunity for disadvantaged kids to be able to choose a private school if their family determines that to be appropriate. I think that's going to be that's good for them. And this all of the above strategy, where we're making a historic commitment to K-12 education, performance funding for our schools, we're creating new flexibility through our innovation program. We began by calling it freedom to teach, but we decided simply to build on the innovation schools concept that was first started here at IPS as a statewide option for our public schools. So more resources, more flexibility for our traditional public schools, more resources for public charter schools, more choices for families through our scholarship program. And last but not least is a historic commitment to career vocational education. You know, when I was applying for this job a couple of years ago, I said we would make it our aim to make career and vocational education a priority in every high school in Indiana. We started that process through the creation of regional works councils and have been in the business of identifying high-wage, high-demand jobs on a regional basis. And now with this funding, which builds on what was a $100 million a year base in career and technical education, we've identified some nearly $50 million in new resources that is going to give schools an incentive to offer courses in high-wage, high-demand jobs. And I couldn't be more excited about it. We've got to make sure that our schools work for all of our kids, regardless of whether they're headed off for school or they're headed off for a career in the job that they place, and this provides for that. There are other aspects of this budget I'm excited about. Our regional cities initiative, fully funded, which I think is going to have a transformational effect, already bringing regions around the state together to think about how they can develop long-term strategies to improve the quality of life in their communities. And Indiana is making a historic commitment to facilitate that kind of regional planning. $200 million for infrastructure, and of course, a broad range of initiatives from infant mortality to the Department of Child Services to domestic violence funding that we strongly support, of course, in this effort. Lastly, a couple of side items. I'm very pleased that we've already signed into law legislation creating the first ever fire training academy in the state of Indiana. I make sure that our first responders have access to the very best training, unified training. And lastly, let's not forget next year's our bicentennial. And I'm very pleased to work with members of the General Assembly to develop what I think will be an appropriate series of initiatives from the state archives to the end of Potato Creek at no cost to taxpayers that I think will be an important statement as we mark our 200th year as a state. So with that, as I said, I'm very pleased with this session, an education session, and very grateful to members of the General Assembly. Just truly believe that as Hoosiers unpack the new resources and flexibilities, particularly as our schools begin to unpack the resources and flexibility available in this budget, they're going to see what we've kept our promise and made this an education session.
Governor, regional cities, can you talk about why you prioritize that program over using the tax amnesty money to pay back the unemployment loan? That would have literally saved every business in the state $327 million. So how did you weigh those two things together?
Well, it really wasn't a choice between any one policy or another. I really came to the conclusion that encouraging cities across the state of Indiana to think regional and to plan regional could have a transformational effect on our economy in the long term. As you know, our initial budget proposal identified excess resources in other state funds. Ultimately, the General Assembly recommended that we use the tax amnesty revenues for that, and I fully support it. But I really believe, and if you haven't yet looked at the report that the Economic Development Corporation produced last year at the urging of the General Assembly on this, and the success that regional cities have had around the United States, I encourage you to do that. I think one of the reasons why this has captured so much enthusiasm across the state of Indiana, and leaders in some parts of the state for the very first time have been coming together and gaining outside advice and consultants to begin to develop a plan for the first time, not to think as a city, not to think as a county, but to think as a region about ways that you can create a quality of life that will attract people and retain people and attract investment. So I'm very passionate about it. And I'm very pleased that we have to be fully funded in this first installment.
Governor, on the issue of reversions in the budget, it seems that lawmakers put in a couple provisions regarding universities, state agencies that would limit your administration's ability to revert funds. Any issues, questions, concerns? Was that one of the sticking points?
Very nice to see you this morning. Let me say, the elements of the budget that have to do with our allotment authority have to do with consultation and review, not restriction. And we've made that very clear with members of the General Assembly. Look, the federal government just revised down first quarter GDP growth. This is a very uncertain time, like this coming. One of the reasons we have a AAA bond rating in the state of Indiana is because of the fiscal management that we've been exercising over the last 2 years, and we'll continue to exercise that fiscal management. The budget gives us a framework for that. But members of the General Assembly know that we'll continue to sharpen our pencils, consult with them as appropriate on the budget committee. But at the end of the day, we're going to make sure that we have the right surpluses, we have the right reserves, and maintain fiscal integrity of the state. Question?
This session, sorry, Glenn Ritz said today after this session, she's not considering a run for governor based on some of the changes to the state board and to her role. I was wondering if you could react to that.
I respect any man or woman in this state who's willing to step forward and seek public office at any level. And that's obviously a personal decision for every family. But for my part, we're focused on the task at hand. And we'll leave politics for that room.
Governor,
Governor, with your State Board of Education appointments, do you plan to reappoint current members, or are you going to bring in all new members, or a little bit of both?
Well, you know, last December I said there were three things I thought we needed to do to move education forward in the state. I thought we needed to fund excellence, and obviously historic investment in this budget, in education at every level and every form, we're doing that. I said I thought we needed to expand choice, building a foundation under our public charter schools, and expanding our voucher program. As part and parcel of that, as well as opening doorways to career education. But I also said we need to fix what's broken. And I'm grateful for the efforts of the General Assembly to work through the process of compromise to make recommendations to reform the State Board of Education. And ultimately, after the next election, to allow them to select their chair. I'm currently reviewing that legislation. There's a lot of moving parts late in that. We'll make decisions about the bill and about the implementation of the bill after we have a chance to do that.
Why wasn't the repeal of the common construction wage on your original legislative agenda or from your legislative agenda at all?
Well, I think from the outset we said this was to be an education session. That was really the priority of our administration going forward beyond a balanced budget. But I can tell you that with the progress of the common construction wage repeal, I was very anxious to be supportive and to be helpful in every way possible. I think that when you look at the challenges facing some of our cash-strapped local schools and local governments, this reform is going to bring much-needed relief to those local government entities. And I was very, very, very pleased to see the General Assembly moving forward.
Why did you use campaign dollars to push common construction wage, but not any of these other items?
Well, these were all doing well. You know, when the common construction wage started to move forward, I just immediately got with supporters of that measure and asked how we could be most helpful. And we just thought it was the most straightforward and most transparent way to do that would be to use the resources from our political campaign to support that. But, I'm very pleased with the outcome. I think it's a win for taxpayers, a win for cash wrapped local governments and local schools. And I look forward to signing.
Does that suggest you see more of a political issue than a policy issue?
I'm sorry?
The use of campaign resources rather than, say, the state government resources that you use with, like, regional cities. Does that suggest a common wage was more of a political issue for you than a policy issue?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. This was an enormously important policy advance for the state of Indiana. And my decision to use political resources to advance that was simply, frankly, our determination that it was that important for us, for the state of Indiana, the people of Indiana, to move that forward, and that was the most efficient and transparent way to do that.
Governor, what about the neighborhood bill? The legislature seemed to go way out of their way to try to make that as palatable to you as possible. How much were you involved in that at the end, and are you going to sign it?
Well, it wasn't on my agenda. And
neither was how the construction wage.
But I had it. I heard it later. Yeah, it's not on the chart, is it? I'm trying to keep faith with what you knew was on the agenda. No, we strongly support common construction. But on the gaming issue, everybody knows my position on this. I don't support expansion of gaming. But I was very open from early on to the kind of changes in business practices of these institutions that would allow them to remain competitive and viable and increasingly competitive in the marketplace. And I'm going to take a very serious look at the legislation. I have a sense there was a good faith effort to address issues that we had raised by the General Assembly. I'm going to give it a fair.
Is there a difference between signing a bill that would eventually, or letting a bill become law that would eventually allow live dealers, and having the live dealers actually come into place while you're in office?
Well, I haven't studied the bill, and I don't know what the parameters are.
You don't know when the live dealer part goes into effect?
my understanding of that legislation is that that in the year 2021, there's an opportunity for gaming organizations to apply for live dealers. But we want to examine that legally and understand that better. But look, I think there are legislators who are stood on this. I'm going to give it a fair look, kind of, we'll make a decision when we get a chance to review it.
Governor, you said the energy efficiency bill will put more money in Hoosier households, but given that the utility companies can recover their lost costs in a virtually uncapped way from those Hoosier households, how can you make that argument?
Well, I just think energy efficiency lowers the cost of energy for every Hoosier, individuals and businesses. And our state had made a commitment years ago to promote energy efficiency. Obviously, in the last session of the General Assembly, there was an effort to carve out industrial users. It went much more broad than that and actually eliminated our energy efficiency incentives program. I made a commitment to come back to that. We did it, and I'm very pleased with the outcome.
But I want to follow up on what you said, because yes, if you use less energy, obviously you'd save money, right. Except that if the end of this, if the utility loses revenue as a result, they can just charge you more, but they can make that up. So in the end, is the will this allow the customer to actually reap the benefits of using less energy?
I really do believe in energy policy that we ought to take advantage of all the resources that we have. We ought to develop all the energy resources that we have. But that energy efficiency, conservation, alternative sources of energy all have to be a part of the equation. And I do believe in my heart that in the long term, by having a policy that promotes energy efficiency in the state of Indiana, that's going to be a win for Hoosiers, for Hoosier ratepayers, and for Hoosier businesses. Matt.
Governor, you said on some bills you'll have to review them, but last evening your office released a statement saying you would sign the syringe exchange bill that passed that evening. What was the impetus behind saying you were going to sign that, and your thinking behind it? Were you watching that so closely that you know exactly what's in it, and timing is of the essence?
Well, we weren't watching it. We were working very closely with members of the General Assembly. We have a tragic situation in Scott County, Indiana. It was the reason why more than a month ago I traveled down to Scott County. I met with public health, public safety officials, citizens in the community, as well as consulted with our State Department of Health and the Center for Disease Control. We identified that we have an epidemic of HIV in Scott County. I made the decision to use my authority as governor to take executive action to allow a broad range of resources, a mobile center. We flowed healthcare resources into the area. We flowed education resources into the area. But I made the decision to declare a public health emergency in Scott County and to authorize a limited and accountable syringe exchange program in that community to make every effort to provide the resources to stop the spread of that epidemic. And we renewed that executive order, but clearly I thought it was important that we create in the law a legal framework for that to continue in Scott County, and also to give the Indiana State Department of Health and local communities the ability to respond in like manner in other public health emergencies in the state. The legislation began in the House of Representatives. We worked very closely with Senator Pat Miller in the Senate as it moved through, and seeing it go to the floor, seeing it pass in its final form. I just want to make it very clear to people that we were supportive of that. I expressed that before the vote yesterday. And I believe this gives both our public health community and our public safety community a legal framework to continue to address this public health emergency in Scott County and to be able to address in medically appropriate ways any future emergency.
We have time for one more question.
What are your plans for 2016? Have you decided on running for re-election?
You know, we've been certainly preparing to seek re-election over the last 2 years. And I would tell you that the morning after the session of the General Assembly, my focus is on completing the work of this session, reviewing the legislation that we've been able to move on our agenda, reviewing a very large stack of bills that are headed on my desk. And once we complete that work, my family and I will take some time to make decisions about our future. But in the end, always comes first.
One more. The RFRA bill, do you have any thoughts on how that should have been handled differently, and what steps do you plan to be taking ongoing to help repair Indiana's image from that?
Well, I looking back, it's, you know, as governor of the state, I wish I could have foreseen the controversy that would ensue. And as I said, I regret the difficulty that Indiana passed through during a time of great misunderstanding about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. I was pleased to support legislation to clarify what the bill was and what the bill wasn't. And I was pleased that it calmed the storm and we were able to move on as a state. And I think the results of this session of the General Assembly speak for themselves. That in the days that followed, that difficult week, members of the General Assembly, in many cases in both political parties, simply rolled their sleeves up and went back to work. I think the people of Indiana this morning will be as pleased as I am to see that even in the midst of some challenging times, we kept our promises. We passed an honestly balanced budget. We even said in the motion, reforms in our Constitution that will ensure that's the practice going forward for generations to come. And we made this an education session. And I'm very confident as people come to understand what we've done from pre-K to adult high schools, career vocational education, to performance funding, where we can pay good teachers more and raise the base of their pay. Give a historic commitment to our traditional schools, also build a foundation under our charter schools and open doors of opportunity to our choice scholarship program. And Hoosiers will be pleased.